stand by for, you know, we're experiencing technical difficulties. So, anywho, all right, here we're going to go. We'll fake like that stuff never happened. You ready? All right, here we go.
You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network.
After much effort, and I still don't understand how this is working, a very good Monday morning to you here on your home for friction and things that aren't working properly. That is the All Marine Radio event. So good morning to you live from Quantico, Virginia, where over the weekend there was a little McNamara family history made. My nephew, I call my nephew, but he's my cousin's son. But she's like a sister to me, so that would make her son's nephews to me. Exactly. Everybody understands. So on Saturday, Johnny Wagstaff was commissioned second lieutenant, United States Marine Corps at Brown Field, where 37 years ago I did that, where 9 years ago my oldest son, John, did that, and then 4 years ago my younger son, Patrick, did it. So it is one of the coolest things about the Marine Corps, and that is in our officers, we all do the same thing. We go to the same places. We swim in the same creeks. We experience the same things. And so So congratulations to my nephew, and get a chance to see him this week back here. But I'm back here with Mike, and we're going to do post-traumatic winning today. So it's pretty exciting and pretty motivating whenever we get to do it, because we know what's going to happen. You know, and it's whenever you get to preach the gospel, it's always exciting. So excited to be back here in Quantico. Excited to see my son, my daughter-in-law, and my grandson. And then my other son, Patrick, moved back here. So, it's my home away from, this is my East Coast home now. And, at least for a few more months, when, after which, my oldest son, he takes off, he goes someplace. And that's what's going on. So today, we'll do the show. Alex Holling's going to join us here now in about 38 minutes. Alex will join us. And I don't know if we're going to do a Mike and Mike segment. You might hear a best of segment today. I haven't decided. Because we traveled yesterday, a bunch of stuff going on today. We'll get done with this. We'll head over to the two venues that we'll do the program at, and we'll op check those, make sure the audio and video stuff works, and then get ready for tonight. So Mike and I got some work to do, and so we'll do that, and then we'll do it tonight for spouses, and then twice tomorrow for Marines at a place called Little Hall here in Quantico. Anybody who's been here is familiar with it. So you got that going for you today, and then we do it, I think, once on Wednesday, twice on Thursday, and then we go home. So, again, always fun. And it always changes. It's changed a little bit since we did it in January. I finished listening to Eugene. Oh, my God. First of all, before I tell you about that, so it's been beautiful in Southern California, right? Even though I'm not there right now, but it's been beautiful out there. It's been like California used to be before it became Seattle for the last 3 months. So anyway, But in those last few months, we've got so much rain that, I mean, the weeds grew and the grass grew. It was disgusting. Yeah, no, I was having some mental health issues over it. I was not happy about it. Yeah, like that. So we got, I don't know, about 4 good days, and then Colleen and I on Saturday had to do some weeding, hands and knees, pulling weeds. So I have to say that my daughter is a great daughter. Both of them are, but Catherine, not so much about yard work, although she will help when forced. But Colleen got out there and pulled a ton of weeds, and we mowed the lawn. I mowed the lawn, and the house now looks like an American place that Americans live. And it was like a huge relief to me, I have to tell you. Well, I was suffering from it. So did that on Saturday. But the weather beautiful, and flew back here yesterday. Night, lovely flight, got on. I'm not a big fan of the 737, though. And this is not the 737, whatever version is having its issues. You're too crammed in, man. There's no legs, there's no play. And I'm 5'10", right? I mean, I don't know how bigger people, taller people get in those things. So, anyway, went to Chicago, flew out here, no fuss, no muss, met Mike at the airport, and then we drove down here last night. It's funny, sitting at the airport, waiting for the rental car, one line, like two clerks, right, and a ton of people in line, and every one of those people, what is it, to rent a car, 15, 20 minutes? Yeah, no bueno, man. So we were doing that, and some lady had to be in her 70s, bitching because the only BMW they had was purple. Exactly. And so Mike, I had my little earbuds in. I was listening to music, being happy. Mike's in line, and he calls me on his phone. I look up like, whoa. He's like, hey. I'm like, what? He goes, what kind of mouse are you listening? And I'm like, no. So he sends me a text and tells me she's bitching about the only color they have for BMW is purple. I'm like, God bless her, man. I wish I'd lived that life. I wish I could get irritated with that. And it reminded me, though, I finished on the flight the second book that Eugene Sledge wrote. And he writes it about his time with the 5th Marine Regiment in China, the Chinese people that he met, what it was like to be around Russians, Chinese, and in China right at the end of after the war. All right. So it's a pretty interesting book. So there's that part. But I thought the most, by far, to me, the part that I was most interested in was the part where he goes home. And it is interesting, the getting on ships in China, and then go back to they land in San Diego, walking around in America again, as foreign as that had been, given the path that he had walked through the Pacific in World War II. Then he takes a train to Camp Lejeune. And he and the rest and whoever left with him at that time, because they did it on a point system. You got so many points for how many campaigns you ran, so many points for how long you were, blah, 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 blah. How long you were in service. There was this whole point system, which would probably be an interesting show one day. But anywho, he gets Camp Lejeune. He gets discharged, and then he goes home to Mobile. And in the series Pacific, there's the event that happens where he goes to college to register, I think at Auburn, and the girl looks at him, and she's asking him questions about his military education. And nothing that he says is fitting into her, you know, sheet she has, like, if this, then this, right? And so, you know, he tells her the weapons courses that he took, and she's looking on her sheet, and, you know, and that's in that scene in the movie where she looks at him, and in the book he says she slammed her pencil down and said, "Didn't the Marine Corps teach you anything?" And he said, "Look, lady, right? They taught me how to kill Japs. Somebody had to do the killing. Not everybody could be back here doing easy jobs." And that's that scene in the movie you see. And he also talks about not being able to go hunting anymore, and how his perspective about hunting had changed, and especially his perspective about life had changed. So I would recommend it. It's an interesting book. I listened to the audio version. I like to do that because I can kind of work while I'm doing that. And I will give you the name of the book. It is called, stand by, China Marine, An Infantryman's Life After World War II. But again, to me, the best part of the book is when he comes home. And the advice his father gave him. His father, I have to look up Sledge's father, but I believe his father served with the Army Expeditionary Force in World War One. And when he came home, he said, "I'm going to give you some advice, son." And one of the things he says is, "Do not drink." Interesting. Interesting. And so, Sledge. So I finished listening to that. So anyway, as the woman's bitching about her BMW, one of the stories he tells is that he said he had to learn how to be very careful about talking about the war because, you know, people would talk about their hardships, and this story is illustrative of that. And it would make his blood boil because they hadn't heard a weapon fired in anger. Okay. He had fought through both with 5th Marines in the Battle of Peleliu and the Battle of Okinawa. And so, and the crazy thing about Sledge is he doesn't get a scratch. And that gave him, he wrestled with that after the war. How could I have gotten through all of that? So many people dead, so many people wounded, and I not get a scratch. How does that happen? Right? And the answer is luck. Now, people can ascribe other things to it. That's there. But the answer is there's probably around Eugene Sledge in the battles for Peleliu and Okinawa. And he fought through every day of both of those battles. What? How many? A billion pieces of metal went flying past his body and head. And he doesn't get touched by them. So anyway, he says he's at this party, and this guy's complaining. He's standing there talking to some people, and this guy's complaining about his shoulder. It hurts. And he says, "Well, did you injure it during the war?" And the guy says, "Well, yeah, I did." And he said, "What did you do?" He said, "Well, I was a civilian flight instructor at Maxwell Air Force Base." And Sledge just stared at him. He said, "And our base commander thought that we should experience some of the things that the guys were supporting experience, so he made us all go on a 20-mile hike. And during the hike, it rained, and my shoulder got wet, and it got cold, and it never has been the same since then." Now, you can imagine Sledge, like, looking at the dude, like, "What do I do?" And he looked at him and he said, "How can the nation ever say thank you enough for what you've done?" And the guy looked at him and said, "Thank you, young man." And he turned and he walked out of the party. He went home. He said, I don't need to be here. I can't do this. Let me go find something else to do with my Friday or Saturday night. So that's that story about the rental car made me think of Sledge. But yeah, I would recommend it to you. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And again, even when he talked about China, when the 5th Marines went to China after World War II, So they stay on Okinawa, and then they thought they were going to mainland Japan, but they went to China, and they wind up in Peking, which is now we know it as Beijing, and they didn't move into the exact barracks that the Marines occupied prior to the war, right, when the term China Marine actually was coined. And but they moved into barracks close to that, and where the quote unquote foreign legations were headquartered in the city, but still in China were Japanese forces that were armed. There were the Chinese communists, there were the Chinese nationalists, and then, you know, there were Russian emissaries in the region. So, yeah, he said it was a pretty exciting place. And then you have all the criminals and the lawlessness that happened and whatnot. And then he talked about the different people that he met, some very, very educated people that he became friends with, to include a priest. And I would recommend it to you. As I said, in about 25 minutes, we'll talk to Alex Hollings. And I thought it was me. So I thought he was supposed to be on today, but I never got an email from him yesterday, and he's pretty religious about that. But he just sent the email a few minutes ago. So we'll get Alex on here, and we'll get an update from him. And then, like I said, I don't know if the Gunner is going to be on today. And so So we may hear best of. If I don't hear from him, then we'll hear best of. And you'll hear from him tomorrow. Tomorrow's show will be a short, our week will do short shows until Friday, which will be 3 hours. But so today we're here in Quantico, and we're going to do post-traumatic wing tonight for spouses. And so we'll do that at a place called the Crossroads here in Quantico. So if you're listening and you know somebody that should come to that, tell them by all means get here. And then we'll do it we do post-traumatic winning for Marines twice tomorrow in the morning and the afternoon at a place called Little Hall, which is the base theater here in Quantico, a place where I was commissioned 37 years ago. Yeah, boom. So do it twice tomorrow, once on Wednesday, twice on Thursday, and then fly home on Friday. So guess what? You'll probably hear best of on Friday too, because I'll be flying. I won't be home. So yeah, you got that to look forward to this week. Anyway, we will the national anthem will make this morning official finally. I don't really understand what's going on with my stuff. I've got the audio coming out of one channel that it normally doesn't come out of, and then my voice coming out of another channel, which I don't really understand. But anyway, it's on the air. That's tribute to, if you hit the buttons long enough, something might happen. So good morning to you. Hope you had a great weekend. Happy St. Patrick's Day, by the way, for those of you that celebrate that. And the United States Marine Corps Band makes it official. And this is dedicated to, I've done it before, but I'll do it again. I've learned so much from Eugene Sledge's writings, and then I've listened to him speak or recordings of him speak. And I'll just tell you, he became a wise man relative to living with trauma. And we would all do well to study him and then live our lives like he lived his. So, because ultimately that's what it's about. So this is dedicated to Eugene B. Sledge. He's a mortarman in Kilo Company, 3rd Battalion, 5th Marines. He went on to become a PhD and serve at Montclair University or Montclair College in Alabama. So he's a fine son of the great state of Alabama. So this is dedicated to him today.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
It defines us. It defines warriors like Gunnery Sergeant John Canley, a leader who led from the front. With his Marines outnumbered, he pushed forward during the Battle of Way City, standing tall during firefights and throwing himself into harm's way to keep his fellow Marines safe.
The only thing I was doing was just responding. The Marines, the young Marines, it shows them that it's not do as I say, it's do as I do. And just being that close with them brings motivation to them.
During firefights, when we'd be all hugging Mother Earth, he'd be standing up directing us. And I think if you talk to every Alpha Company Marine, we're amazed that he was never shot.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, he goes, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain, it's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once them bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day. And Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
Check the weather now here on a Monday that I've had worse Mondays than this. Come on. Currently cloudy and 45 here in Northern Virginia at Marine Corps Base Quantico, and it is sunny and 57 further south along the East Coast at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. It is partly sunny and I lost it. It is partly sunny and, what is it, 47? Partly sunny and 47 in Granbury, Texas. It's sunny and 54 in 29 Palms. Let me kill that. Yeah, see, the music is on a different switch today, and it's not being controlled by the mixer, so it's problematic. It's kind of walking on top of the vocals, which we all know that dog don't hunt. So anyway, let me get back to the weather. 29 Palms, sunny and 54. Pendleton, sunny and 45. Okinawa, Japan, dark cloudy, 71. So they've warmed up. In the Al Anbar province of Iraq, it is 62 degrees under sunny skies late in the day. So they've warmed up a little bit. And Afghanistan's warmed up, even though it is raining. In Helmand province, it is cloudy, raining, and 63 degrees. At the home of All Marine Radio in Costa Mesa, California, it is sunny and 54 degrees, heading for a high of 73, and then the crappy weather comes back tomorrow. So that is a look at your weather. When we come back, we'll check a few news headlines. Alex Holling's going to join us in 13 minutes. Whatever you do, don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. 10:51 here on the East Coast of the United States. Yeah, I'm on East Coast time now. What the hell? We'll check a few news headlines, and then we'll check top five stories in the early bird. Top story that caught my eye today, actually written yesterday, is an Associated Press story headline: U.S.-backed forces admit to difficulties defeating ISIS in Syria. These stories always kind of... I don't know how I would say it. They always kind of irritate me because there's some kind of script that this is supposed to follow, and it's supposed to be easy and go as planned all the time. Is that the way it is? Especially when you have somebody backed into a corner and they, let's see, how do I say it? They've had months, if not years, to go ahead and plan the defense of something. And the whole premise of the story, that there's difficulties, you know, defeating ISIS in Syria. You know, I don't know. It's almost like we think that we can write the script and then it just goes like that. Well, I mean, the problems, especially towards as this thing winds down, is, you know, they've strong pointed and they have massively, massively fortified this area around the city of Baquz in Syria. So now we're going to roll in there. Why don't we just surround the thing? And it could take months. We don't care. Do we need to send a bunch of guys in there, right, and get them whacked so that they can, you know, they can blow up the whole world inside that city, right? And then they can scream and yell and thump their chest. You know, starve them out, right? Just keep drones and above that city, and every time something moves that looks like a military target, whack it. And just annihilate it. So, I don't, you know, anyway, here's the story. U.S.-backed forces fighting to recapture the Islamic State group's last outpost in Syria admitted on Sunday they were facing difficulties defeating the extremists since they were being slowed by, and so listen to this, right? So they're being slowed by mines, tunnels, concerns over harming women and children who are among the militants. The battle to capture the extremist group's last patch of territory in the eastern part of Syria, which is right against the Iraqi border, the western Iraqi border, a collection of tents overlooking that are covering foxholes and underground tunnels in the village of Baghouz has dragged on for weeks amid an unexpected exodus of civilians from the area. The sheer number of people who have emerged from the village, nearly 30,000 since early January, according to Kurdish officials, has taken the Kurdish-led Syrian Democratic Forces by surprise. Most have been women and children whose existence in the labyrinth of underground caves and tunnels was unknown to the fighters. Now, they've had caves before, but what they're describing here is something different there. In the last 2 weeks, many fighters appeared to be among those evacuating, but an unknown number of militants and civilians remain inside, refusing to surrender. Here's the quote. "We are facing several difficulties regarding the operations," SDF Commander Kino Gabriel told reporters outside Baghouz on Sunday. He cited the large number of mines and explosive devices planted by ISIS and the existence of tunnels and hideouts beneath the ground that are being used by the militants to attack the SDF forces who are defending, who would defend themselves. "The camp is all that remains of the self-declared Islamic caliphate that once sprawled across large parts of Syria and Iraq. But a declaration of victory and the group's territorial defeat has been delayed as the military campaign sputtered on in fits and starts." If to write that is to be ignorant of ultimately what that entails and how much blood the SDF is willing to shed for that. To me, like, let it take 6 months, right? Start pumping water into the tunnels. I mean, that's what they did on Iwo Jima. Start pumping water in the tunnels. You can come out or you can drown. We don't need to go in there. Yeah, you hear stories by Japanese survivors, and it's pretty grim stuff what the Marines did on Iwo Jima, but they pumped salt water in, and then they dumped diesel fuel on the top of the salt water, and then they'd light the diesel fuel on fire, which sucked all the oxygen out, right? I mean, the fire is sucking the oxygen out and forcing you out of the cave or to drown, one of the two. But the Marines stopped going in those caves. A final push started on January 9th, but had to pause on several occasions, mainly to allow civilians to evacuate and fighters to surrender. So, anyway, I saw the story and I just thought, you know, and the other thing you notice, I mean, when you see pictures of this place, there are cars that have come from all over the region, right? Everywhere in this village. I mean, it's like, if you didn't know, it looks like a used, like a wrecker place where you have all those cars and parts being cannibalized. There's cars and trucks on top of cars and trucks on top of cars and trucks. It's crazy. Crazy. So that in the news today. But again, turn your stopwatch off, okay? Because guess what? You want to go do it? Do you want to go do it? Do you want to be the last guy to die in that thing? I don't want to be the last guy to die in that thing. Yeah, they've already spilled a whole bunch of blood. Do they want to spill more? Anyway, next headline. Trump met with his national security team after Afghan officials complained about the Taliban talks. President Donald Trump and his national security team had an hour-long classified meeting on Afghanistan on Friday, a day after a top Afghan official openly complained that the Trump administration was keeping his government in the dark about the negotiations with the Taliban. The meeting in the secure room at the Pentagon called the tank included Mike Pence, Mike Pompeo, CIA Director Gina Haspel, Trump's National Security Advisor John Bolton, among others. The session was a classified briefing about Afghanistan, according to a White House official who spoke on the condition that he remain anonymous. The Pentagon has been developing plans to withdraw about half of the 14,000 troops in Afghanistan. Patrick Shanahan, acting SecDef, said he has no orders to reduce U.S. troop presence so far. But again, these two, you know, we've been reading about this the U.S. Special Representative, Zalmay Khalilzad, right? And his negotiation with, well, how does anybody expect it to work? I don't understand how the Afghans aren't in right? How the government of Afghanistan isn't at the table. Khalilzad said the two sides reached two draft agreements covering the withdrawal of U.S. troops and guarantees that Afghanistan would not revert to a haven for terrorists. But he was unable to persuade the Taliban to launch talks with the Afghan government. So how the hell does it work? Afghan's National Security Advisor Hamdullah Mohib visited Washington on Thursday to publicly complain that the Trump administration has alienated the Afghan government, legitimized the militant network, and is crafting a deal that will never lead to peace. His blunt remarks prompted a scolding from State Department officials. Mohib, the former Afghan ambassador to the United States, said talks about withdrawing troops should be conducted with the Afghan government, which has a bilateral security agreement with the United States. He also suggested that the negotiations conducted by Khalilzad, a veteran American diplomat who was born in Afghanistan, are clouded by Khalilzad's political ambitions to lead his native country. So, he got that going for it. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, Alex Holling's going to join us. So, don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. Yeah, don't worry about it. I'm not going to sing that for you today. So anyway, we'll cut the music. And because we're having issues today, we'll get Alex Hollings here, and we'll go. So,
hey, man, can you hear me?
You know, I'm having some technical issues, so it's one of the awesome things about live radio. Yes, say something.
I am here and hopefully live.
You are definitely here, so you are live. All right. First of all, how are things? Give us an update on being now a suburbanite, being everything you never wanted to be, and then we'll talk about your physical condition. When you come on, you've got issues, so there's all kinds of stuff to talk about now.
I tell you, my life is never boring, that's for sure. But I got to tell you, my suburban house husband lifestyle here has led to some purchases recently. I just finished installing a new security system that I swear I have almost entirely because, and I know if you and I have talked about this before, I still can't get used to people walking by my house. I can't get used to people driving by my house. I live on a cul-de-sac, so still there isn't a ton of traffic, you know? But every time, in my old house, where I'm used to living in the woods, if I could see some headlights out my window, it meant someone was at my house. You know, there was no other reason for there to be any headlights within seeing distance from my windows. So now, every time I see a car go by, my first instinct is, who's here? And likewise, every time
I see a woman
out a window, I'm like, well, who the hell is that now? Of course, it's just my neighbor walking her dog. Those of you who live in civilization may be familiar with this Neighborhoods app. It's like it's sort of like a Facebook or like a – it's like a social media platform, but it's based on geography. Like you – it connects you with other people who live in the same neighborhood that you do. The neighborhood might extend out a couple of miles, or it might just be like, you know, a couple of blocks of your housing development. And so, of course, my wife and I both signed on to this app because our dog had ran off and we were trying to find our dog. But now, ever since then, I get a notification anytime somebody posts. And somebody the other day, of course, posted a video from their Ring doorbell camera of a guy trying to break into their house. Why on earth they decided to post it on there as opposed to just giving it to the police, I don't know. But I immediately went off the deep end, went online, bought a security system. I just finished installing it last night. I now have like three overlapping security systems in my house. This place is locked down like Fort Knox. You know, so living here has only made me more paranoid, I guess, is what I have to say.
Congratulations to all of us. Hey, tell me about your security system. What did you buy? Because, I mean, you see them, there's cameras in doorbells, there's cameras in your door, there's motion-activated cameras. Talk to us.
I don't want to tell you the brand only because I just don't want to advertise exactly what I've got going on in here.
Look, trust me, a big hitter like you starts dropping brand names. You're gonna skew the sales. They're gonna want a footnote. Like,
trying to get some product placement around here. But you know, all of these systems, they all have the same basic capabilities.
Which is what?
So, you know, there's ADT out there. There's Simply Safe out there. There's a number of systems out there.
Oh, you got one of those? I thought it was just like your own home security thing.
Well, so that's the thing. It used to be with a lot of these.
Because that's what I have. I just have a home security.
You used to need to be a homeowner.
Well,
No.
I'm not. I'm a kind of vagabond. And so, but I mean, it's powered by what's my company? The M1911. That's my company. That's my home. That's my home security smoke wagon. It's my 45. I don't have anything else, so I'm ignorant.
You
in this
say
area.
That I actually have a 1911 on a pistol magnet in my office for the same reason. But back before I was a dad, I had a gun in the living room, a gun in the basement, or in my office, a gun in the bedroom. Now just about all the guns are locked up all the time, you know, cause I have a toddler in the house.
Right.
So, but because of that, it's made me, I feel as though I've kind of given up that security blanket where I used to go, well, there's a gun in the bedroom closet. If anything bad happens, there's a gun in the bedroom closet. Now I don't keep, guns as readily available. As I once did. So, at the same time as I live like around way more people, God's honest truth, I'm probably safer in this environment than I may have been out in the middle of nowhere, because here people are probably going to be, I think if you were going to break into a house in this neighborhood, you'd want to do it quietly. It would be to rob someone, not necessarily for like a home invasion. Again, the whole idea behind one of these security systems, in my opinion, it's not that I think that I'm like it's not that I think that I'm a really important target or that I have anything that's all that valuable. My intent is really just to make my house the least convenient house in the neighborhood to break into. You know, if three houses down, that house doesn't have a security system and a crazy guy armed to the teeth in the basement, you'd rather just break into that one than mine. That's my goal, is to just make any criminals that come by be like, this one's not worth it. You know, because in most cases, I think that's really all it takes to protect yourself, you know, just be an inconvenient target. So, you know, my system's got, you know, entry sensors, motion sensors. I've got security cameras on the inside and on the outside. I've got probably much more security than maybe is necessary. And then all around the house, I have signs for security systems that aren't the one that I have. So if you are particularly savvy, it'll at least be kind of annoying trying to hack in and turn off my security system. So I'm pretty pleased with the layout I have now, but you know how these things go. Give me 6 months. I'll come up with another thing that I'm convinced that I need, and I'll add it. I haven't lost you, have I?
No, you haven't lost me. Are you, can you get on your phone and see who's at your front door and yell at them?
Yes, I can. Yes, I can, as a matter of fact. Although I have a different setup for that than the overall security system. Just because of the piecemeal way in which I've gone about doing this over the years. I've got some Nest cameras. I've got some cameras from other systems that seemed like a better deal at the time, so I bought them. But to be honest, when it comes to cameras, I know that people have hacked into Nest cameras and stuff like that. If I'm using them for external security on the outside of my house, I'm not that worried about someone finding a way to remotely access a camera view that shows my front porch. I like Nest cameras.
If that guy's coming for you, don't worry about it. Okay, that's my advice.
Yeah, exactly.
If that guy's going to hack into your home, like, and reroute your cameras to show your grandma's bare ass, so that you won't know what's going on, and he can come hack your shit, then you're screwed. If that guy's that committed to getting in your house, you ought to just say, dude, what do you need? I'll give it to you.
You know. Likewise, because my wife and I, while we're setting this up, and I'm like, we need to establish an SOP for if you hear the alarm going off in the middle of the night, what exactly are you going to do?
Did you say SOP to her?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Being married to me has got to be a blast, right? Being married to me is a pleasure every day.
You've now become that guy.
Yeah, as my wife and I are having this conversation, we're talking about it. If someone there are two types of villains that there's nothing we can do about, right? If someone is so technically savvy that they're going to turn off our security system to come walking in the door, the resources that they have, like they're out, I'd be out kicking my coverage by trying to keep them outside. If they have the resources to do that, if they want to come in and steal my crappy old TV, more power to you.
I'm with you. But just pray that I don't, right? I don't, pray that I'm not in the region.
In the room.
Yeah.
Because I will riddle you with holes.
Because I have some issues, and I could really work them out on a jackass like you that I caught my house.
Yeah. But the other type of villain that I really won't stand a chance against.
Are you over that a little bit? Because somebody tried to set your house on fire. So are you just like now you're like, I'm more concerned about arson than I am with
honestly,
robbers.
I am. I'm much more concerned about someone trying to do me harm in the most cowardly way possible. Is really my biggest security concern.
Define
in this line of work.
Cowardly way. How would there's?
I would say trying to light my house on fire is cowardly. I would say that, but no, maybe that's just because I'm
not there. A lot of men don't say, "Oh yeah." Well, how about if I burn your?
I light a gas can on and then put it on your porch and run off into the darkness?
Yeah,
because
what a man would say is, how about I light you on fire?
Yeah, if you have a problem with me, and Lord knows lots of people tend to, I do get plenty of hate mail. I get the thing about hate mail. I really do think is that it's one of those things where one angry message really kind of has the same weight as 10 positive messages. On any given day, I might get.
Are you a wuss about hate mail? Do you take it personally?
Sometimes I am, man. Sometimes I really am. I hate to admit it. I wish that I could break that habit.
I get 3 words into it and I stop. I can't take that.
That's the best way to go, man.
Honestly.
Because I'll say this. Sometimes I'll get hate mail that I realize is entirely out there. It's a Fruit Loop who's just screaming crazy stuff at me. But every once in a while, maybe I got something wrong. Maybe I was wrong. That happens.
I'm supposed to say that never happens.
It happens all the time.
I never think that.
That's fair. when you're doing analysis work, if you don't ever think that you're wrong, it means you're not following up.
Is that what you call? Is that what you call what you do? Analysis work.
That's what I call some of what I do. I would say some pieces I do are just hard-nosed, relaying the news. But some pieces that I do are analysis pieces. And what I'm really trying to do is take a lot of disparate elements and put it together into one story to kind of make it easy as a primer, for instance. Let's say you're not sure about a complex topic.
Okay, hold on. I want to ask you a question now. This is kind of a little – Alex is my go-to guy for, like, punctuation questions and literary stuff. Is it primer or primer?
I say primer, but
what's
I would argue
difference?
That this is kind of like the in route versus en route. In route is technically correct, but people say en route, and you're going to let them get away with it.
Right. That's how I do. That's how I write it. I'm en route. ENROUTE.
Yeah.
And it always says there's no such word. I'm like, what the hell?
I once had a master sergeant try to correct me when I said en route, and I was like, no, I got this one. Pretty sure I got this one.
And then you find out that it's not in spell check, though.
I'm a type.
It's not in spell check, though. And if it's not in spell check...
Oh, but there's a lot of words that aren't in spell check that I use every day.
Like, en route's the one I know, E-N-R-O-U-T-E. And I type it, I'm like, what do you mean it's not a word? Of course it's a word. I'm en route.
And so it's actually not in spell check.
What is that?
If you use Google Docs or Microsoft Word,
yeah,
the word militaries, plural, is not considered a real word. You know, so, I mean, hypersonic isn't considered a real word, I think, just because the systems haven't caught up with the ludicrous things that we call the technology.
Yeah, it's not a real world
used
till that shit hits your ass, right? Then it's real.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, but, like, as far as these security systems go, I really do think that, what do you get one for?
I have to tell you,
the matter.
I have to tell you, though, that was a sweet transition right there. You're just like, boom, you brought it back. And that's not something you normally do. Normally, when you go off on a tangent, it's like a Saturn V missile on the horizon. It doesn't come back.
I'm getting better every time I come on with
you. I know. Honestly, that was an interesting professional piece of growth on your part. And I felt so moved by it, I thought I had to point it out to everybody.
Well, now everybody knows that I suck at this. So
no, but they know you're. But they know you're improving. He came back to the point that they were talking about 4 points ago. That's impressive.
But the real reason I've got it, I think, is just so that, you know, because I tend to be down in my office working until all hours of the night, well after my wife and daughter go to bed. But in this new house, my office is in the basement, pretty detached from the main body of the house. So when I hear bumps in the night, especially since moving in and just being of the lunatic that I am, I go and run up and check upstairs, you know, 10 times a night just because I heard a weird noise and I'm insane. Having the security system has really alleviated that. I don't have to run upstairs, you know, 10 times a night while I'm working. I can just go, the alarm's not going off. Check the cameras. I'm good. However, I do have one internal camera. I have one camera inside my house, but I set it specifically so that it beeps audibly and you can hear the shutter open anytime the camera comes on, because I want to make sure that the camera's not on at any point when, you know what I mean? Like if I'm in the room, I don't need to be on camera. So in the middle of the night when my wife comes walking through and she hears click, click, beep, she will literally flip me off and be like, this is insane. You don't need a camera in the house. I'm going back to bed. So I may have gone a little overboard. We still get used to it.
No, come on. If you can't have a little fun with it and you can't harass somebody else using it, then why have it?
I mean, why have cameras if I can't turn them on and try to get my wife to flash them?
Otherwise,
why'd I install them, you know?
And then, why would I even, right? And if there's a possibility that I might get caught doing that stuff, then that's when we really need to take a hard look at who controls this thing and how it happens.
Yeah, I got to be honest. I'm still a little reluctant to leave it up. You know, I put it up. I've done a lot of research into the security associated with it. And the one that I got has a physical shutter. I got that on purpose so that you could know for sure, even if the light's not, like, let's say someone managed to hack into it and they made it record without the light being on,
right,
you wouldn't be able to tell. But with a physical shutter, you know, it's kind of like how I keep something taped over my webcam on my computer.
Right, right.
I don't know. Something about it still has me a little uneasy. I'm not sure how long it's going to last.
Well, you just got to be careful when you throw the Batman costume on. You got to put a little sticker on the box that says, check the...
I actually do own a Batman costume.
Why does that not surprise me? Check.
Well, it's important to note that I bought it while I was on active duty, so
right,
now I would really look more like a Tootsie Roll. But,
right. That's why you have to have the sticker on the box of the costume that says, check the shutter. Check the shutter before donning costume. So just a little bit before.
I will say, we'll see. It may or may not last. It may end up getting moved to a less common area of my house. I'm not sure. We'll see.
Right.
For now, I kind of appreciate being able to, like, see the entranceways of my home and stuff, but I don't know. We'll see.
Now, let's see. What's next? Security. Now we need an update on your health. How's your vision?
Well, I'm going back to a specialist this week, so hopefully I'll have good news soon. Unfortunately, I don't really have much in the way of news at all right now. I'm still using my computers with the font blown up to a gigantic size and just living the old man life with my big PCs that the VA gave me. But I don't know. I'm hoping I'll have good news soon when it comes to that. Yep. For anybody who isn't aware, I have a weird disorder in my eyes that causes swelling in my retinas that compromises my vision. Sometimes it's blind spots. Sometimes it's blindness. Sometimes it's one eye. Sometimes it's both. It's been a particularly bad as of late. I've been going through a tough time with it. But I'm hoping that the specialist the VA is hooking me up with is going to be able to do me some good. We'll see.
Yeah, I would say the specialist provided by the low bidder, maybe not your best course of action. So,
although I will say, at the Atlanta VA, the eye clinic there, I've often, on record, don't have a lot of good things to say about the VA, by and large. To include the Atlanta VA on Twitter, the last time I went, I was pretty angry at the fact that I woke up almost entirely blind, which has never happened to me before. I was terrified, and it took a little over 90 minutes for me to get a human on the phone at the VA to try to get an appointment for me to get there.
Is that the worst, though? I was doing it trying to pay something last week, and all I want to do is talk to somebody who can tell me this, right? And there is no option, right? You're in this cave, and it's just a circle, and you can't. You hit zero.
I did not
recognize that choice.
It's especially frustrating. I think this last time because I was in a bit of a panic. You know, I woke up for a bit of backstory. The first time this eye problem ever surfaced was it is a pre-existing genetic condition that I have. But I wasn't aware of it until just a few years ago. I was boxing. I was sparring. You know, I took a pretty good shot to the right side of my face. Went home and went to bed. Got up the next day and couldn't see out of my right eye. It turned out it was I had partially detached my retina sparring. But that in conjunction with the swelling of my retina just totally threw everything off skew. So as opposed to just having like a spot in your vision like a detached retina normally would, it just threw my right eye totally out of whack. But it took a while before the doctors were able to figure out what the hell exactly was wrong. At first, it just seemed like somehow I had managed to – I mean, it wasn't that good a shot that I had taken. You know, it was a solid right hook. I wasn't wearing headgear, but it wasn't like – I mean, he didn't even ring my bell, you know. But it looked like maybe it was just that. Maybe I had just gotten knocked so good that my right eye stopped working, which was a really terrifying and stressful period of time for me, you know. But eventually the doctors were able to determine, I forgot how you say what the thing is, but it's the abbreviation is CSC, but effectively, any exposure to cortisol steroids, will really exacerbate it. And those type of steroids are like what you're given if you get a spider bite. Cortisone cream that you put like on your skin is a cortical steroid. Or in my case, when they give you an injection in your spine, for a herniated disc, that's a cortical steroid that they inject into the disc to reduce the inflammation and let it kind of go back in. And that's what I had just done recently. I had two slip discs in my back. I had just gotten two injections in it. And then lo and behold, a week later, I went blind in my right eye. The punch just happened to be like a serendipitous bit of timing. But it took months to figure this out. And ever since then, it's been kind of an ongoing struggle. Sometimes my eyes work, sometimes they don't, but it's almost always in my right eye. So then a few weeks ago when I woke up blind in both eyes, I could make out shapes and light, but I couldn't make out my wife's face. I was terrified, man. You know, so when I called the VA and I got sent in circles for 90 minutes talking to robots, just trying to get a hold of somebody to ask for an appointment, it was a really shitty morning. You know, this is the types of things that gives the VA a bad name, in my opinion, because I was in a bit of a panic. I can only imagine. I mean, it wasn't a life-threatening condition. This isn't a 911 situation, right? How many other veterans
find themselves in more dire
circumstances?
And it's good that you make that distinction. It was only you going blind. So it wasn't like life or death. It was just you going blind and you know. But again,
I've been to the emergency room for this situation before. That was the first place I went the first time, you know, and there's nothing they can do for me there. I need an eye specialist. I needed an eye doctor, you know? And I was very, although I will say this for the Atlanta VA, after I waited on the phone for 90 minutes, then they gave me an appointment for about 2 hours after I was on the phone, which is good because it takes a solid hour and a half to get to the VA. Once I got there, I only waited another 2 hours in the waiting room before being seen just before 5 p.m. You know, the whole process started at around 7:45 a.m. So they weren't that fast, but they did get me in there, and they did get someone to see me same day. And considering some of the horror stories I've heard from the VA, that's actually really quite good, and I'm grateful for that. And to be fair, the doctors at the VA Eye Clinic have been fantastic. I've had really good experiences with them. I don't mean to speak ill of them.
No. The only point I was trying to make is that, right, the VA tends to be the low bidder for medical commodities.
Absolutely.
Okay?
And you know, so, I mean, I know with
but
nurses,
I know you don't want to
you can get
you
a job as a nurse at the VA with a bad track record, you know, without an in-state license, you know, which it doesn't necessarily equate to a bad track record, but it seems to me that the VA is staffed by some incredibly hardworking individuals, but they're not all the best candidates.
Well, and
that
again,
we're
you don't
want to.
You don't want to. How do you even talk about this? You don't want to bash them as human beings, as people, and insult their integrity or anything like that. And that's not what I seek to do. But when you have to talk about mental health and things like that, you have to have, and if you're going to have a grown-up conversation about, you've got to be responsible for your mental health, okay? So you've got to understand that this is the system, okay? They tend to be the low bidder, okay? Does it mean that everybody who works there isn't good? No, but you get what you get when you're the low bidder. And that's just,
you know, and
that's
this
just
is the
reality.
Concern I have about,
that's just the reality
about
of it.
Healthcare,
right?
You know, in the United States. The concern that I have is that I have single-payer health care.
We can all be on this system. Are you kidding? That's what I like about it. Then everybody can get this shit. We could all be in the same boat.
We could all just get garbage coverage, you know? Like, you know, this is the fear I have, you know, because I have TRICARE. You know, I have TRICARE Select, or TRICARE Prime, excuse me. But the closest doctor that's in-network for me is an urgent care facility. So my primary care doctor is an urgent care doctor an hour from my house, or I can go to the VA 90 minutes from my house. That's not because the only doctor in the area is an hour away. There are plenty of doctors. You know, TRICARE is not the best medical coverage you can get if you're not near a base. If you're near a base, TRICARE is great. But when you're out here in the world, having this single-payer coverage is inconvenient, man. It really is. I would hope that if the entire country were going to be on a system, it would work better. But my concern is that if an entire country's on the system, it couldn't possibly work better.
It can't. We don't have enough providers, right? And
exactly.
Then it's
the
like,
infrastructure yeah. couldn't support it.
And now I have all this access to it. It's like, yeah, give me mine. I want mine. Okay, no. And they'll get what we get. No problem. Let's see. Are you available in July? What the fuck did you just say?
For an appointment with the VA? Is that, yeah, that's exactly how it goes. It's 100% how it goes.
Right.
You know?
Conversely, Alex, of course we can see you. How does July work? And then we'll do the follow-up in December? Like, what?
No, especially if you're calling with a mental health problem. Because if I had the stones today to finally get up and go, you know what? I'm going to do something about it today. Today I'm going to make a change for the better in my life, and I'm going to pursue good decisions for my mental health. So then you call the VA and wait for 2 hours. And by the time they answer the phone, you're pissed off now. You're not very motivated. You don't want to make good decisions for your mental health. You want to yell at somebody.
Right.
But instead you try to be polite and professional, and you say, hey, I was hoping I could make an appointment with a mental health professional so that I could talk to them about trouble I've been having. And they say, fantastic. How does July sound? And you go, but it's March. And they say, yep, well, you know, but we can't see you until July. But, you know, it's very important to us that you come. And you say, okay, I guess July then. So you make an appointment for July. You wait 3 months to go. That day you may or may not actually still have the stones to go and have a conversation with a stranger about it. But what do? You go there, you try your best, and you do get on that prescription. And you need to come back in 6 weeks. so that you can find out whether the prescription's actually doing anything for you. And God help you if you miss that appointment, they will not let you claim disability for whatever ailment it was that you were going to the appointment for because you missed one. I get pretty angry. But the VA years ago decided that my knees, which are, you know, I blew up both my knees, not blew up, but I tore up both my knees, and that's why the Marine Corps separated me. The VA sent me a letter asking for me to come back to have them looked at again. I got the letter the same day as the appointment. I called them and was like, I can't come to this. It's past tense. And they said, oh, don't worry about it. We'll take care of it. They sent me another letter saying my knees were no longer covered because since I didn't come to the appointment, the problem had obviously resolved itself.
Of course.
This is the VA, man.
Don't you know, don't you know anything about anything? That's how it works.
Like, and what it really is, I would contend, is that often they're overwhelmed, you know? And it's easier to push you off till tomorrow. It's easier to push you off until July. Not because they don't care about you personally, right, but because there's 500 people they're trying to help today, yeah, and they can only help 50.
Right.
But for all the allowances I want to make for them personally, the system is bad. It is screwed up. Well, and part of it may well be that we've had, you know, the directors of Veterans Affairs. How many have we had in the last 2 years? Three? Four? You know, that we have no consistent leadership at the top of the VA. I don't think that we should be surprised that it sucks.
Wow, listen to you. You know? Listen to you.
Well, I mean, if we had an infantry regiment.
Well, no, that no. Went well, let me.
Four
I don't know
commanding
how does
officers
it,
this
how does
year,
it
how
not,
combat capable would they be?
How does it not? Give me a system that is structured like the VA structured, and then tell me how it doesn't suck.
And that's a great point. That's a great point. It again speaks to the fact that we're not really, this isn't really a criticism of the employees of the VA, but more the way the system that they work in is structured hurts them. They can't be as effective as they could be because of the system, right, you know?
And
but
here,
I'd also
what
argue
I,
that
what I hear in my head,
priorities are wrong.
What I hear
you know?
In my head is, we can all do it if we just meditate and we'll hold hands and we'll all get centered and then we'll, God damn it, we'll just work harder and try to do it better for everybody. Like, come on, man. Like,
yeah, and again, to go back to mental health that we talked about the last time I was on the show, statistically speaking, the data all states very clearly that when we're talking about long-term depression and PTSD, the only highly effective treatment is a combination of medication and therapy. That is the only way that we have seen a resounding, not a resounding, but a high level of success is through that combination. The VA can't hire that many counselors and therapists, so they just choose not to, and they just stick with the medication route, even though study after study shows that it only results in slightly better than placebo, and as far as people dealing with long-term depression and post-traumatic stress disorder. So we know that what we're doing doesn't work. And we just still keep doing it because of our funding model. But then, you know, we say that, you know, veteran suicide is a really important thing and we're all going to take it really seriously this election. And then we slap a bunch of yellow
well,
on
I
car.
Think what you have to do is you have you to, know? If you want to understand it, you got to caveat that. Within the context of the asset, the resources that we allocate there, we take it very seriously. Right.
I guess that's a fair way to say it.
Right.
Because the problem is that we're not allocating sufficient resources.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, you could say that if you look at the whole system, there's a shit ton of money getting allocated. There's a shit ton of money getting allocated. But I don't.
Last year, the VA left like what $6 million on the table that was supposed to be for suicide prevention outreach, and they just didn't use it.
That's nothing. That was in somebody's wallet. It was in somebody's desk drawer at the VA.
But that was the entirety of their television and radio outreach for suicide prevention.
So what's your point?
My point is that they even have resources that they're leaving on the table.
Why?
And
and you don't think that was a deliberate decision that they made? Let's just not do that. You think it somehow got screwed up?
Well, according to them, it was due to a lack of leadership oversight. They said that we don't have a clear direction that we're moving in. So we didn't want to, we've got too many moving parts.
So we said,
change over command.
So we said, fuck it, we're not spending the money.
I think that what they were basically contending is that they had so many moving parts they lost track. But I don't know if that's better that they were incompetent or chose not to spend the money. In either regard, what pisses me off about it isn't the sum of money. You're right, $6 million is nothing, yeah. You know. But it's about the intent. The VA does not have any system in process or any system in place right now to gauge the efficacy of their suicide outreach efforts. In other words, when you're a marketing professional or a PR professional, one of the hard things to do is find a quantitative way to show your work to your employer, right? So if you're a PR guy and your job is to try to get good news out about a company, the only way you can, that's part of the challenge. The last step of a PR initiative is finding a way to provide deliverables to your customer, right? To say, right. These are how many articles got published. This is how many people were talking about you as a result of my effort. The VA uses their suicide prevention outreach efforts are similar to a marketing or a PR effort. It's all about how many people do you engage with and what meaningful change does it evoke in the world, right? The VA does not have any system in place to do that. They will do a suicide prevention outreach effort, and then they just leave it at that. They don't do any, after-action report to determine whether or not it was successful in any way. So they're not doing a good job of using the resources. They're not doing a good job of determining whether or not the way they use them are effective.
How do you know that? Not that I doubt.
By reading the statements provided by the VA themselves.
Okay, that's a problem.
Yeah, that's a real problem, And but they most recently, the most recent time that the VA got dragged through the mud in the media for this, they all but left it at Donald Trump's feet, saying that it was because they haven't had consistent leadership throughout the Trump administration. There is, to be fair, there's an argument to be made that you need consistent leadership, but I think that it is an absolute cop-out to try to blame this on the executive branch when you guys have been doing this job for a long time. You know what you're supposed to be doing. You don't need a director of Veterans Affairs to tell you that we should be trying to stop veterans from committing suicide.
Well, and don't you have a whole bunch of other initiatives going that are ongoing, like your current operations, and then all of a sudden the reason this got screwed up?
And don't you have dozens of layers of managerial oversight?
All right, we need to stop bashing the VA. It'll eat up the whole program. We don't have enough time for this
shit.
You're right. Just here's a warning for everybody.
I don't hate the VA.
I love the VA. They do the best. Again, to understand the VA, you have to understand this. They provide they're a provider of last resort. Everybody who has any other system that they can go to tends to go to that system, so they tend to be a provider of last resort. If you ever want to check where you are in life, go walk around the VA campus one day and look at the indigent, look at the homeless, look at everything that you see. Tell you what, you ever want to feel good about where you're at in life, just go spend an afternoon walking around and look at what you see at a VA hospital. It's not pretty. And the VA deals with
and
that.
Veterans who are listening, when you go to the VA, please don't be that guy that takes out your frustrations on the employees there, on the nurse, on the person who checks you in. I see them every time I go. These people were just as frustrated as I am.
Pissed.
So they are very aggressive with those poor employees. It's not their fault, guys.
I walked in one day, and this guy is standing there yelling at the receptionist, right? Where is he? And she says, well, he's coming out there. I looked at Barack Obama's picture every day that I came here for 8 years, and I want Donald Trump's picture up there. I'm like, really?
Is this the fight that we're going to have today?
Receptionist, man. God, I just walked by, and I looked at her and smiled. Hey, hang with them. But, yeah, that's maybe – the legitimate people have a beef. What about the crazies that go in there and that shit?
Yeah, man, and that's the thing. That's the hardest part for me staying angry when I arrive and I'm waiting for a few hours. It's impossible for me to be angry at the people who work there when I just see the abuse that they absorb. You know, it tends to be from an older generation and usually guys, right? But, man, they can be brutal.
Let me ask you. You're a smart guy, and you cover these issues. So, I'll ask you one more question, and then we'll go to the lightning round about what you sent me. Okay, so why does it make sense to the major VSOs, the Legion, the VFW, Disabled American Veterans, that the VA be about treating everything that's wrong with me? Why don't they hand me a Medicare card that's kind of like Medicare, right? And then the campuses are reserved for combat-related disorders or things that tend to happen in service, orthopedic issues, right? But oncology, you'll do that through your local provider, right? Psoriasis, hemorrhoids, all non-military related, you just use your Medicare card. Why are the VSOs so adamant that those services not leave the VA and that the VA wouldn't become a world-class organization? And I say this, but like the Mayo Clinic in burns, in prosthetics, in post-combat related mental health, in orthopedic injuries, which is a ton of, what is the argument for that? Do you know?
Well, I don't know what their argument is, but I can mount one just based off my experiences. Both my parents both worked in healthcare for their whole lives. My father ran nursing homes. The last one he ran before he retired was a veterans home. It was paid for through state funds. And I think that part of what the issue is, because that veterans home had a VA medical center attached to it but funded separately and whatnot. But I think that part of the issue is that because of the way that our insurance infrastructure works in this country, what they were initially trying hard to make sure was that elderly veterans would be able to get care for any medical ailment that they may have had, and they could get it all in one place, right? The idea, you know, the utopian idea was that an 80-year-old veteran who doesn't have any money, who doesn't have insurance elsewhere, who's in a tough economic position, can go to the VA hospital and get all the care that he needs without paying out of pocket. You know what I mean? It's a medical refuge is, I think,
right,
what the overall intent really was. A one-stop shop that can take care of our veterans when they most need it. And I absolutely appreciate that idea. You know, I get where they were coming from. The problem with going to, like, that Medicare card, which I think is actually the direction we are moving in, but it requires a lot of pretty expensive infrastructure to actually make happen. The reason why is because when I go to the VA, the federal government is already paying those doctors a salary, already paying those nurses a salary, that administration staff, the x-ray techs, the guy who's helping people park cars. Everybody's already on the payroll, and it's a consistent and steady budgetable expense. I know that I'm going to pay this much salary, I have this much salary overhead every year. It makes it very easy to budget for. When you start outsourcing medical care to the outside medical community, you run into two issues with that. Number one is it becomes much more difficult to budget model for what those expenses will be because you don't know how many people are going to be outsourced to other medical professionals, what those professionals are going to charge, and what care they may need to receive. So it's a lot more difficult to allocate funding for the future based on how much that's going to cost until you have a few years' worth of modeling to kind of go off of, right? The other issue is that once you do start outsourcing that, you need to hire and staff new administrative staff that are going to deal with referrals, that are going to deal with negotiating the prices because the federal government and TRICARE almost never pays sticker price for medical care that they outsource to the private side. There's a lot of people that need to be hired and paid for and maintained in order to establish that infrastructure. And there's a lot of money that's going to be flowing out of government coffers and into private health care that they're going to need to allocate and budget for. There's just a lot of moving parts. So the original idea really was a one-stop shop that can provide all the care that they potentially need that we don't need to farm out and pay elsewhere for. And kind of what you were saying before, the VA does tend to sometimes be an employer of last resort for some medical staff. So that the system didn't really work out all that well. Right? You know, there's not that much incentive for the system to work very well. But the idea was really it was made for consistent economic modeling. It made it easy to fund, easy to pay for, and hopefully would do a good job. And, you know, reality tends to not work out. You know, the best laid plans don't survive enemy contact. I think that we've seen it doesn't work that way. But I understand the intention behind it, if that makes any sense.
Yes, but it so they support, but they support it again. There's a science project for you. Why do they support it? Because I don't understand. Because to me, you could get all the care. And again, I understand why scientists, why politicians would support it. Because that means that you're going to lose jobs in your district, right? As we
downsize, there's
the
a lot of moving parts.
Right?
I think the BSOs are aware of the fact that if you're 76 and you're you know, dealing with cancer or something like that. You don't have any money. You live alone. Getting to the VA hospital is a challenge enough as it is. A lot of VAs can provide some transportation to you. But so then getting to a specialist,
here's the problem that I heard.
You know, 20
here's
miles
the problem
away
that I
is
heard.
Another hurdle.
That because all the numbers will go up because more guys will use it.
And I think that's one of the bigger challenges. As overwhelmed as the VA is, we need to encourage more veterans to utilize the resources available to them through the VA. But the VA needs to not suck first. You know? And I don't know. I don't want to present it as though the VA, there's a simple solution and they're just not doing it. I don't know how to fix the
there's
VA
not a, yeah, there's not a simple solution if you're going to provide all these services and you're going to be average across the board. I just say get rid of...
And that's a great point. Maybe that's the problem right there.
Right.
That's a great point.
But again, we're going to... I don't know. All right.
It might be worthwhile for the VA to shift towards being more of a veteran insurance than a veteran medical provider.
That's an interesting discussion about doing that. So I just wonder, all right, I'm going to have to do some research to find out exactly why. Because when I read these arguments about against privatization, and what I would argue for is partial privatization, and so that, you know, when you go to the VA, that you would be, you know, you'd be, yeah, you know, I'm going to go, you know, because the VA, some of them are incredible at like prosthetics and stuff like that. The advances that have been made,
absolutely,
know, and it always happens.
Well, you know, to be honest with you, the Atlanta Eye Clinic is, you know, from the research I've done, they're recognized as having some of the most advanced, you know, equipment and procedures in the country. The VA can provide you with some excellent, excellent care. It's kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Sporadic, I guess, you know? And maybe you're right. It's because they're devoting so many resources to making sure that they've got a good podiatrist clinic, you know, when that may not necessarily really need to be essential. That could, you know, you could treat it like TRICARE does, you know, with TRICARE Prime. If I live so many miles from a base, they authorize me to use civilian doctors, you know what I mean, that they need to be in network. But something like that, I feel like feasibly could and should work. I think Donald Trump has even brought that up a few times about giving veterans access to civilian doctors through like a VA insurance program.
Yeah. No, and, but again,
it's one of those things where like not everything that guy says is a bad thing just because you don't like him. You know, that's a good thing.
And that was the genesis of, because I have the same question, like why am I going there for this when I could see my own doctor and it's not unique care. So why don't you just outsource it and then you get into this whole, you know, the VA.
Or situations like mine where the closest VA is over an hour drive away. I have to take a day off from work because I'm going to be in the waiting room for 2.5 hours, you know. So I've got 2 hours of driving minimum, 2 hours of waiting minimum, plus however long I'm being cared for. That's a whole day. I'm fortunate that I can occasionally take a day off from work. Plenty of folks can't, you know. I don't know, man. I could bitch and gripe about the VA all day. I don't mean to.
No, but, you know, let me just tell you.
The system is flawed.
Here's my point about the VA is to be realistic about it. And it's not bashing the VA when you look at people that are going to use that and just say, hey, know this, all right? They are the low bidder, okay? That's why they have turnover there. That's why you don't see the same therapist all the time. Guess what? Because when they can get higher-paying employment, they go. Okay.
You know, you got me going again, but I hate to keep going, but you're right. That's another important thing that we do not get in military or veteran healthcare is seeing the same doctor. If you're a guy on a cocktail of pills for a variety of different problems, everything from pain management to mental health to diabetes to what have you, you take, you know, my good friend Grizzly, a Vietnam veteran who recently had cancer surgery. This poor guy gets up every day and takes a dozen pills because, you know, he had his thyroid removed, you know, type 2 diabetes that he's been, you know, he's doing better about but still contending with. He's taking a dozen pills in the morning and then 8 more at night. Having one doctor that knows all of the medications that you're taking is really important to make sure that your medications aren't interfering with one another in a negative way. Having one doctor that you see more than once is important when you're pursuing mental health so that you don't have to recount your whole story every time. You know, having one doctor is really beneficial in a million ways, and that's something that we as veterans and we on active duty never get access to. Every time you go to medical, you see a different person. Every time you go to the VA, you see a different person. And that really can cause medical problems, you know? It's just another of a million reasons why the system is broken, man.
Anyway, so memo to AOC, be careful what you wish for, girlfriend, right? Because if they make you go to that and use it as opposed to your incredible
the health care that they provide you as a congresswoman.
As a congresswoman. Yeah, stand by there, princess. All right, let's talk about some things you've written. The most fascinating thing you've written in the last week is?
Oh, man, this Killdozer story has really just got me. I'm really interested in this. People are probably already familiar with the story of the Killdozer, but if you're not, back in 2004, this guy fortified his bulldozer with concrete and steel armor and just took it on a rampage through town, tearing up City Hall, tearing down a concrete plant. He's really been regarded as a folk hero since. He didn't kill anybody during this rampage. It was as a result of a zoning conflict where basically the town allowed this company to build a concrete plant that removed his only access road to his small business. So there was no way for his business to get traffic anymore. It was effectively putting him out of business. So, you know, people see him as this guy who was pushed too far by a corrupt business and a corrupt government and decided to push back. The truth of the story is a little more complicated than that. I've already gotten a bunch of flack on Facebook, people who really want desperately for this guy to be a hero, right? But as is the case with most things in real life, things tend to be in shades of gray, right? So this guy, his name is Hemeyer, I want to say. I might be pronouncing that wrong. But the concrete plant that they built, he bought that 2 acres of land that his business was on in 1992 for $42,000. In 2002, they offered him $250,000 to buy it from him before they built the concrete plant, and he agreed. He was like, yeah, that's a good deal. It's a huge profit. It's enough money for me to go open a business elsewhere. But then, as is so often the case, he probably spoke to somebody who was like, hey, man, you've really got them by the balls. You should try to get more money. So he did. He went back and asked for $375,000, again, for this plot of land he bought for $42,000 10 years prior. And they said, okay, we'll give you $375,000. And I think that he was a little emboldened by that. So then he came back reportedly, according to them, because he's dead. According to them, he came back and asked for almost $1 million in order to give up his property.
Why not?
Why not? And the concrete plant effectively said, screw you. And they just went to the zoning board, got approved for their zoning to build their facility, even though it would screw this guy's business. You know, and in their mind, they're like, listen, we tried to help this guy out. We offered him $375,000 for his little 2 acre plot of land in rural Colorado that has no access road to it, so it's effectively worthless from here on out. You know, if he doesn't want to play ball, that's on him. He, on the other hand, and many other people side with him, saw it as a real slight against him and his personal liberties. So he sold the property and used all of that money to buy sheets of tool steel and quickcrete that he used to armor his bulldozer. Some parts of his bulldozer had a foot of steel and concrete armor over the cabin of the vehicle, the engine, and portions of the tracks.
How did it move?
This bulldozer was badass, man. So with all this armor on it, as well as he had a 50 caliber rifle turret, a .308 semi-automatic rifle turret, and a .22LR rifle turret that he built on it, with only 3-inch slats to fire out of that had armor plating that he could open and close so that you couldn't shoot in. He put cameras all along the exterior that he enclosed in 3-inch bulletproof plastic so that he wouldn't need to be able to see that were connected to monitors inside. And most disturbingly, he designed this whole shell of armor to be lowered onto the bulldozer via a custom crane he built with no way to get back out. He knew it was a suicide mission. Once he was in it, there was no way out, right? So on June 4th, 2004, a year and a half after all this went down and he closed his business and sold the property, other guys had actually even seen him building this giant bulldozer. He claims that God clouded their vision, and that's why nobody caught him. He got in, drove it right through the wall of this building he had already sold, drove it directly through the concrete plant, tore that building down, and then went on a rampage, tore down the old mayor's home, But this is where the story about him being a hero gets a little shady.
Oh.
The old mayor's home, that mayor had passed away. The only resident of that home was his 85-year-old widow.
Nice.
Why are you trying to take out her house, you know? He drove through the library that the police had to evacuate. There were kids in that building before it was evacuated.
See?
You know?
The best scheme of the best fortified bulldozer goes awry. Which is, so all you kids that are listening out there that cut school today that listen to All Marine Radio, this is why you don't do shit like this, okay? Right?
Yeah,
find
well,
a better way.
Ends, use your words. Him puncturing his radiator and shooting himself.
Yeah, in the immoral you know? Words of Fred Claus, use your words, okay? Use your words.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not arguing that he didn't get screwed by his town, but he did.
But come
he
on.
He brought a fair amount of it on himself.
Yeah.
You know?
No, he's culpable. He's
I don't
culpable.
Think he's a hero. He's just a guy.
Okay, now you know, I'm going to give you 60 seconds to do each one of the next three. Go. Nuclear posture talk. 60 seconds.
Oh, we're talking about Russia's Status 6 or Poseidon nuclear weapon that's utterly worthless. People may have heard about it because it's a 100 megaton nuke that's in a stealth submarine is what people report it as. It doesn't matter if it's a 100 megaton nuke, a million megaton nuke. Well, okay, a million might matter. Mutually assured destruction doesn't change based on delivery method. It's literally just a marketing ploy. It offers Russia no strategic capability whatsoever they didn't previously have. Their ICBMs are already way more powerful than ours. They already have a much larger nuclear arsenal than we do. The thing is that we've got plenty of nukes to wipe them out completely. The nuclear triad ensures that even if they launched a bunch of Poseidons, it wouldn't matter. It's literally a bullshit weapon system that's just great for garnering a whole bunch of media attention. Did I come in under 60?
All right. Nice. Let's see. Russia and China war simulations show American defenses could fold in a large-scale conflict. Go.
This is something that the reason why it's important we talk about stuff like this isn't that America would lose a war to China in the Pacific tomorrow. The reason why we talk about stuff like this is because here in America, there's this overwhelming sense of like as though we can't lose a battle. You know, our military is incredibly powerful. It is the largest on the planet. As Mattis once said, we have no preordained right to victory. You know, it's very much true that right now the way our military operates, let's say we were to get into a conflict in the South China Sea, we couldn't deploy our entire Navy in the Pacific. And even if we could, we are so reliant on digital communications technologies and navigation right now, not just for communications and knowing where our boats and planes are, but for guiding our ordnance and things like that, that we would have a lot of trouble operating in a near-peer conflict right now. And repeated wargaming is showing that in Europe and in the Pacific. The thing that's protecting Europe from Russia is Russia's economy. NATO could not stop a large-scale invasion of Europe.
Air Force new stealth drone has a huge advantage over Russian and Chinese air defense.
Oh, this has got me so excited. All right. It's the X-58. Maybe I'll give you the wrong name for it because I'm in a hurry. But effectively what it is the Air Force is now testing a new drone called the Valkyrie. What the Valkyrie is it's a low observability, somewhat stealth, subsonic platform. It's a UCAV. It's a drone that can drop two small diameter bombs or missiles from an internal weapons base, so it has a very small radar signature. The reason why this is such a big deal is because the Valkyrie only costs $2 to $3 million to build, and it has an operational range of between 1,500 and 2,000 nautical miles. It can use rockets to help it launch or take off without a runway in austere runway conditions. The reason why this changes everything is it's got the same payload capacity as an F-117 stealth fighter, which is really a bomber, a Nighthawk. It's got a longer operational range than just about any fighter platform that we have, and it's got low observability when it comes to radar and infrared. For the price of the missile strike that we launched on Syria, that was really just a punitive strike where we blew up a couple of chemical weapons, like related facilities, we could have built and deployed 30 of these UCAVs for the same price as that missile strike. These UCAVs would have a 2,000-mile range and could deploy munitions themselves and come home. It gives America the opportunity to have a volume in our air superiority strategy, as opposed to what we have now, which is quality over quantity. We had 300,000 aircraft at the end of World War II. We have about 13,400 now, you know, because we pay so much more per airplane now. With these things, with these drones that cost $2 or $3 million a piece, We could blot out the sky with these drones.
We could
make clear conflict.
We could make it rain.
And make it rain. This is a big deal. This is the Valkyrie program I'm really excited about.
That's the future right there. The future is that program, and then you might see F-35s controlling swarms of these things, right?
And that goes directly into, there's a couple of programs like Skyborg, which is the most ridiculous name I've ever heard, but it's an AI wingman program.
There you go.
And I think the reason why they're calling it Skyborg is that we'll chuckle when we talk about how it's learning how to kill people.
All right, look,
but that's
first
a
of all.
Discussion for another time.
First of all, thank you very much for bringing us up to date on your life. We appreciate it.
Yeah, man, I'm always happy to. I don't know how many people will actually care. But if anybody's interested in security systems, I've got all kinds of stuff now. So hit me up on Twitter. I'm always happy to talk security.
All right. Thank you very much for the visit. And also, I should say this publicly, but Alex introduced me to a woman last week, or 2 weeks ago. Sharp girl. And I've been doing what I can to help them as they fight not to become the next Camp Lejeune, the next Agent Orange health event. And because the DOD will fix and get everybody in quality housing, no doubt in my mind, right? The question is whether they will make whole financially families that have had to pay out of pocket because the health conditions were so bad. And the long pole in the tent is, will they do the right thing for people whose health they've harmed irreparably, and will take care of them for the rest of their lives? Because they will need that, and their track record in doing so is horseshit. So, and that's
I'll
really,
tell you what, I don't know
really
how the American, I'm going to be a jerk right now. I don't know how the American people sleep at night knowing that the children of our warfighters are struggling with health issues because of the housing that we're putting them in while our warfighters are away at war.
They sleep fine.
I don't know how we're cool with this.
They sleep fine because 1%, less than 1%. You know how much the Marine Corps is, the population, active duty Marine Corps right now?
Oh, man, it's got to be some tiny fraction of a percent, maybe a third of a percent.
0.7% of 1%.
Jesus Christ.
That's zero there as far as
that's. And that's exactly why we don't care about Afghanistan.
Exactly.
You know, that's exactly why we don't care about this housing problem.
Exactly.
Everybody wants to support their troops until supporting your troops requires 15 seconds of Googling.
Right.
You know,
support
as soon as you have
troops.
To Google which person to vote for will support VA reform, we're too busy for that.
So
you know,
I'm
going to
go out
on
a limb. Support the troops might mean, right, support when they need money to pay for their kids' health issues because the DOD damaged them for the rest of their life. That might be
implied. I tell you what, if I lived
implied,
in military housing, I would be out of my mind.
Well, and the
You're
problem is,
right.
The problem is, and what these women are dealing with is, you know, why when you see these hearings, why is there nobody in uniform standing next to their spouse? Are they afraid? Well, I mean, Tom Cotton just had every one of those service chiefs say, you know, you don't need to be afraid. We're on your side. But that's not the reality. That's not the reality.
Yeah,
that's not the reality that they live, and that needs to change. But I just want to thank you publicly for putting me in touch with
you. Oh, man. I would like to thank you for helping shine a bigger light on this story in general, you know, because, like I'm saying, the American people seem all but disinterested in this issue. And this is a huge and very, very important issue. So thank you for helping shine a light on it. Hopefully we can convince people to really start caring about this. Because it won't be until the public puts pressure on our lawmakers to make this better that things get better.
Well, I tell every wife that I talk to, if you're not afraid, you have to let them know that you're not afraid to burn it down the next time they go, they're up for election. I will make commercials.
Yeah.
I will make a commercial of me crying, telling this story. Right, to defeat you if you do not help me.
Let me ask all of you guys that vote along party lines this right now. When you're voting for a candidate, I think it's important. I understand voting along the party because your party represents the ideologies that you like to support. If your candidate's not willing to do anything about this and you think that your candidate is pro-military, I would contend that they're not. They're just giving platitudes.
Yeah, ditch them.
You know?
All right,
yeah,
man.
If your candidate says that they're pro-military and they're not engaging with this, they're not actually pro-military. You know,
Alex Hollings, he of NewsRep, he of fightersweep.com, he of Popular Mechanics, he of oh so many things. Thanks for the visit.
Thanks a lot for having me, man. Always a blast.
There you have it. The one and only, Alex Hollings. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.